We're going to be in John chapter 11. I believe it's on page 919 in the little Bibles in front of you. Is that right? Jill, my famous counter, always makes sure that I have that number handy. So page 919 in those Bibles, John chapter 11. We're going to be talking about Transformers, and if where you're seated, you should see a little Transformers napkin, which is totally yours to keep. We go all out here to give you the best parting gifts that we can possibly afford, which is a napkin in this case, and a party napkin at that. So if you're wanting a Transformer party for your birthday, they've got it at Target, all kinds of stuff. It was really cool, and I was wanting to buy a Transformer for everybody, and that was like $9 a piece, and I was like, well, that's a little much. And then they had the little cardboard box things, you know, that you can make them different ones and stuff. And that was like $5. And I was like, those people aren't worth that. And so then I was like, hey, here's napkins for $1.99. You get 16 of them. This is perfect. So we're talking about Transformers this morning. Anybody grow up watching Transformers? Or maybe you had a kid that religiously watched Transformers? Always loved singing the theme song with them, you know, Transformers. More than meets the eye, you know, hey, you know. And they totally don't exist. But nonetheless, we love the cartoon, and now they made it into a movie. Unfortunately, I did not get to see this movie yet. Yeah, I know, isn't that terrible? But what I wanted to do, I read up on the theme, and it's the same theme as it always is. You know, people are going to blow stuff up, and other people don't want them to blow them up, and there you go. That's the story. But I wanted to talk really about, with Transformers, about better or bitter, okay? Better or bitter, and things are going to come our way where we're going to have to make some life choices as to what we're going to become. And so as we talk about Transformers, I think the thing that always comes to my mind is when I read the Old Testament, okay, and I read about what God did and how he kind of acted in the Old Testament, and then I read the New Testament about how God acted in the New Testament, as someone who's been a believer in Christ for a long time, I still look at the Old Testament and go, man, God comes off as kind of a meanie, you know? And in the New Testament, it's like, where has this guy been, you know? And I don't know about you, but if you've ever just started reading the Bible recently, or, you know, you're new to Gateway, there's a lot of people that come to Gateway that, you know, they're giving church a chance, and they haven't done that since they were 5 years old, literally, or never. You kind of read some of the Old Testament, you're like, man, God was rough. And it's kind of like, you know, how you have the Decepticons, you know, for the Transformers, they're the bad guys, you know, the bad Transformers. And then you've got the Autobots, you know, those are the good guys. And it's like in the Old Testament, God is like, in some ways, like a Decepticon that, man, if you get out of line, he's going to wipe you out, you know? He's going to take you out. And then in the New Testament, he's kind of like this Autobot that he's here to save the day, and no one's going to stop him, and he's going to save and protect humanity. And I don't know if you've ever read a lot of the Old Testament, New Testament before, but it just seems like, are we dealing with two different guys? And it's so difficult. And for me, when I approach it, it's kind of like the Old Testament is, you know, a little more rough, a little more crude, and God's kind of this, you know, vindictive, vengeance kind of guy that, you know, if you don't follow his ways, he's going to take out your country and everything else and make you go to war. And in the New Testament, Jesus is almost presented like a, in relative terms, almost like a Tickle Me Elmo, you know? It's like we go, wow, what is the deal? And so most new believers, when they start reading the Old Testament, are like, whew, I better skip ahead to the good part, you know? And we like reading the things about Jesus because it seems like, wow. But what we fail to understand is this, is that God, from the beginning of time, his entire plan was always for the salvation of mankind. Since the day that we decided as mankind, as humanity in the garden, to rebel against him, his plan was to save humanity. That hasn't changed. He hasn't changed characters. But what we sometimes don't see is what's going on behind the scenes. A lot of times when God gets angry in the Old Testament, it's because a people have turned their backs on God for several hundreds of years. It's not a thing that God wakes up one morning and says, that's it, you know, I've dealt with them for 3 days and I'm sick of it. It would go on for centuries, and finally God would say, enough, enough. This is what's going to happen. But we read through those things and we don't realize that we're flipping through centuries, you know, of stories. And we think, ooh, man, you know, it's kind of rough. But God in his plan from the very beginning when we chose to sin against him was to provide for us. It's the very first thing he did for Adam and Eve. And if you know that story, you know that the first thing he did was he made clothes for them. That was the first thing that he did. When he knew that they fell and he found out what was going on, he made clothes for them. Immediately he started providing. And then the plan was in place that he would send Jesus, God's son, for our salvation. That was the plan from the very beginning. He didn't make it up 2,007 years ago. He didn't suddenly decide then. From the very beginning, he knew this is what was going to need to happen. And so as we look at it this morning, what we're really kind of going towards the question, and it's the question that a lot of people have, but I think they're a little embarrassed to ask or a little bit nervous like God's going to get you, is, okay, if there is this loving God, why does he allow such suffering? Why does he allow me to hurt? Why does he allow good people to go through such traumatic things? Why? I want you to read with me John chapter 11. Now, we're going to read quite a few verses here, but this is one of those stories that I don't want to interrupt it in the middle and skip to the end because it's a story worth reading, and it's a story worth getting in its entirety. John chapter 11, we're going to read down to verse 44, so get ready for reading along, okay? A man named Lazarus was sick. He lived in Bethany with his sisters, Mary and Martha. This is the Mary who poured the expensive perfume on the Lord's feet and wiped them with her hair. Her brother Lazarus was sick, so the two sisters sent a message to Jesus telling him, Lord, the one you love is very sick. But when Jesus heard about it, he said, Lazarus' sickness will not end in death. No, it is for the glory of God. I, the Son of God, will receive glory from this. Although Jesus loved Martha, Mary, and Lazarus, he stayed where he was for the next 2 days and did not go to them. Finally, after 2 days, he said to his disciples, let's go to Judea again. But his disciples objected. Teacher, they said, only a few days ago the Jewish leaders in Judea were trying to kill you. Are you going there again? Jesus replied, there are 12 hours of daylight every day. As long as it is light, people can walk safely. They can see because they have the light of this world. Only at night is there danger of stumbling because there is no light. Then he said, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but now I will go and wake him up. The disciples said, Lord, if he is sleeping, that means he is getting better. They thought Jesus meant Lazarus was having a good night's rest, but Jesus meant Lazarus had died. Then he told them plainly, Lazarus is dead. And for your sake, I am glad I wasn't there, because this will give you another opportunity to believe in me. Come, let's go see him. Thomas, nicknamed the twin, said to his fellow disciples, let's go too and die with Jesus. When Jesus arrived at Bethany, he was told that Lazarus had already been in his grave for 4 days. Bethany was only a few miles down the road from Jerusalem, and many of the people had come to pay their respects and console Martha and Mary on their loss. When Martha got word that Jesus was coming, she went to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that God will give you whatever you ask. Jesus told her, your brother will rise again. Yes, Martha said, when everyone else rises on resurrection day. Jesus told her, I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die like everyone else, will live again. They are given eternal life for believing in me and will never perish. Do you believe this, Martha? Yes, Lord, she told him, I have always believed you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one who has come into the world from God. And she left him and returned to Mary. She called Mary aside from the mourners and told her, the teacher is here and wants to see you. So Mary immediately went to him. Now Jesus had stayed outside the village at the place where Martha met him. When the people who were at the house trying to console Mary saw her leave so hastily, they assumed she was going to Lazarus' grave to weep. So they followed her there. When Mary arrived and saw Jesus, she fell down on his feet and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping and saw the other people wailing with her, he was moved with indignation and was deeply troubled. Where have you put him? They asked them. He asked them. They told him, Lord, come and see. Then Jesus wept. The people who were standing nearby said, see how much he loved him. But some said, this man healed a blind man. Why couldn't he keep Lazarus from dying? And again, Jesus was deeply troubled. Then they came to the grave. It was a cave with a stone rolled across its entrance. Roll the stone aside, Jesus told them. But Martha, the dead man's sister, said, Lord, by now the smell will be terrible because he has been dead for 4 days. Jesus responded, didn't I tell you that you will see God's glory if you believe? So they rolled the stone aside. Then Jesus looked up to heaven and said, Father, thank you for hearing me. You always hear me, but I said it out loud for the sake of these people standing here, so they will believe that you sent me. Then Jesus shouted, Lazarus, come out. And Lazarus came out, bound in grave clothes, his face wrapped in a headcloth. Jesus told them, unwrap him and let him go. Now, I don't know if you caught the statements that both Martha and Mary said at different times to Jesus. Obviously, there had been some talk between the two of them, maybe in the family and the other mourners as well, that why isn't Jesus coming? And you notice that both of them say the same statement and don't even know that the other one has said it because it's at two different times. They haven't had a chance really to dialogue about it. And they both look at Jesus and say, Lord, if you would have been here, my brother would not have died. Now, while we read that as a comment, we all know that if you say that in just the right way, it really is a question. The question really is, why didn't you come? See, they're trying to find out if he's going to explain why he delayed himself 2 days. Because if you noticed at the very beginning of the story, it says that Jesus hears about it and he doesn't do anything. They come to him and say, hey, Lord, the one that you love, I mean, this is like one of your best friends. He's doing really bad. He's sick, maybe even sick unto death. And then the Bible records that Jesus stayed there another 2 days. And it doesn't even record if he taught. It doesn't record if he did miracles or anything like that. It's just like he hung around doing nothing. And haven't you been there before? Where you have something so deep upon your heart and hurts you so badly that you wish that it would get fixed and you cry out to God. And it's just like Jesus is hanging out somewhere and he's not going to show up. This is one of the rare instances in Scripture and really in life where Jesus finally does show up and kind of right the wrong, if you want to call it, or correct the trauma. But you know what happens years later, and we don't know how it happens or what happened? Lazarus died again. Now, I don't know about you, but to know that you're going to die once is one thing. To know that, man, I'm going to have to go through all this again? That's kind of tough. And so while Lazarus is brought forth to show people that Jesus had the power over death, there's something strange that happens within the story that Jesus is moved with indignation. And I know that a lot of times in our language we use the word indignation to mean angry. You know, if they say he was indignant, you know, he's angry. No. What it literally means is if you've ever been in one of those points in time in your life where it just hurt so bad that you could physically feel it. It was that type of emotional pain that registers on the physical scale. And maybe it was through a breakup, or maybe it was through a divorce, or maybe it was through, you know, someone abusing you, or whatever it might be. You know that pain. And you can immediately, when I name that pain, you can immediately go back and be like, oh man, it's like I relive it. It's like I can feel it all over again. Maybe it's a loss of someone that you love. And then you don't necessarily want to make a statement to Jesus as much as you want to ask the question, where were you? Why didn't you come to my rescue? This was a good thing. These were good people, or I was a good person. What happened here? And it's just like Jesus is a couple days away from your life, and he's not showing up. And you go, what is going on? And we struggle with that, and we struggle with this. We struggle with thinking, if I ask that question, God could get really mad at me, and I want you to know that God never gets angry at that question. Most of the time, I think we are not honest enough with God. He already knows how we feel. To hold it back is just being like we're lying to him, you know? We're not really being authentic in who we are and how we feel. If you go back to the Psalms, okay, King David wrote most of those. King David, God said, this is a quote from God, David was a man after my own heart. Okay, this is, nobody else had that beside his name, all right? Nobody. And how many times do you read in the Psalms where David cries out, my enemies are around me and you are doing nothing? Where are you? Do you not understand? I am being humiliated here. There are wicked people around me, and they are trying to do me in. He talks about those who create rumors about him. He talks about those who are trying to overthrow his position. You ever been there in work? Of course you have. You ever been there in school? Of course you have. You have something that somebody else wants. King David knew exactly what that was like, and he was like, times that he would say, I've been awake all night, and my bed is literally drenched with the tears overnight from crying. And he goes, God, where are you? Even Jesus on the cross is recorded to have said, my God, why have you forsaken me? A lot of people go, oh, what's that all about? What that was is, that was when God laid the sin of the world, your sin, my sin, and everyone else's, upon Christ. And because God can have nothing to do with sin, he pulled away. And yet when we read that question, we go, ooh, is that legal? Is that fair game? Is that okay to say? We've got some friends of ours that's gone through a really, really rough time. On my scale right now, they're number one is the good people who's having a very traumatic time. Brad and Becky Graves are good friends of ours. As a matter of fact, when we were going to start Gateway Church, they were the kind of the inspiration behind that. He was kind of my mentor and everything. They lived here in Cleveland. Now then they're back in Arkansas. They will be going in November, in just a couple of months, to San Diego. And they're going to lead a major effort to do church planting there in San Diego. And so they're currently at a church in Arkansas where they're getting training and that sort of thing. And got an email this the other day from Becky because I wanted to ask her, hey, you know, how do you respond to these questions, you know, about bad things happening to good people and, you know, with what you're going through. Brad and Becky had twins, I guess it was 9 or 10 years ago, maybe a little bit longer than that, but somewhere in that range. And since then, they've wanted to have children, and that just wasn't happening, and Becky got pregnant. And, man, they were so excited. But there's some real problems with the baby, and I'm going to read you the email that she sent me just yesterday. It says, the doctors tell us that our baby has a very severe birth defect. No chromosomal abnormalities, just something interrupts the early stages of development, of which there is no known cause. It just happens sometimes, but it is very rare, only 2.5 in every 100,000 births. From the shoulders down, the baby is severely deformed. The heart, they believe now, may be inside the chest, but the rest of the organs are on the outside. This is not something that they can fix, though there are other not as severe abdominal defects in which some of the organs are on the outside, which can be fixed. The baby is thriving, healthy inside of me and fully on me, but as soon as the cord is cut, the baby will not survive unless he or she dies beforehand. My body perceives this as a normal pregnancy, so outside of ultrasound images, nothing else is different. She talks about she's feeling lots of movement, seeing my growing belly that grows exactly as it should, and hearing that very healthy heartbeat does make it difficult for me to believe that this baby will not live. I'm holding out hope for this child and praying for a miracle while getting questions daily by strangers and people who do not know us well about what I'm having, when I'm due, and so forth. That is hard sometimes, but I simply answer them like this is a normal pregnancy. Now then, last week, her dad, she got a call, and her dad had a major heart attack, a massive heart attack, and they were about to wheel him back for surgery, and they gave him about a 5% chance to make it. They were able to put her on a conference call type of thing with her dad before he went back to surgery. And then this is what she says. Until my dad passed away unexpectedly last Thursday, I had not honestly questioned God. I simply had been leaning on him and knowing he had a plan. But after he died, I began to question why all this was happening, plus us moving across the country in November at the same time. I question, then I receive peace about his timing. I keep reminding myself that he is in control and that none of this is a surprise to him. His grace is sustaining us. So when you say a prayer, or maybe you see a baby somewhere or whatever, you may not remember Brad and Becky as being the name, but pray for them and pray for their baby. One of the things that she told us this last week was that, you know, while it was certainly a shock, you know, with her dad, he had no trouble before to die so suddenly. She goes, you know, now then, she said, it kind of gives me a little bit of peace that if my baby doesn't make it, that there will be my dad waiting on my baby. And she said, that's a great comfort in all of this. But, you know, you look at a couple like Brad and Becky and you go, man, they're trying to do a good thing. They're not trying to take advantage of people. They're good people. They're doing the right thing. They've prayed for something. God gave them something. And all of a sudden, something's terribly, terribly wrong. And I just can't imagine what it's like for Becky to be in a supermarket and people go, oh, when are you due? Can you imagine? She told me, she said, we've already taken out a burial plot just in case that the baby doesn't make it, which is certainly the way that it's looking at this point. And I look at that and I go, God, what are you doing? These are good people. Do you know how many bad people I know that, you know, seem to have things go well? King David asked those same questions. Why is it when I look around, it seems like the evil ones are the ones prospering and the ones who are godly are the ones that are not doing so well? And I just look at that and I go, I understand now why some people choose to be atheists and agnostics. You know, an atheist is one who doesn't believe in God. An agnostic says, well, I believe there's something kind of out there, but I don't know that we can know it. And if you ask an atheist, why are you an atheist? Most of the time, this is what they will finally say to you. And it's what they've said to me, because I just don't understand how if there's a God that he would allow such pain and suffering. So what they do is, and it's easy for us to do is to say, you know, if there's all this pain and suffering, then there must not be a loving God, because it's much easier to explain no God than it is to explain that there is a God, but yet he allows pain and suffering. And we look at Jesus here, and it says he is moved with indignation. He was deeply troubled. The Hebrew literally means he began to stumble. He began to stumble. He was in such pain. And I know that a lot of people have always joked around about, you know, people say, you know, what's your favorite Bible verse? And people that don't really know the Bible may say, ah, Jesus wept, you know. And some of us have, you know, joked around about that. Oh, I know one, you know, Jesus wept. But may I suggest to you that that is probably the most theologically deep truth of the Bible within those two words. Jesus wept. He felt the pain. You may say, well, if he knew he was going to bring Lazarus back, why was he crying? That's a great question. Because he knows that he's going to do that. He knows he's going to see Lazarus again, and he knows that he's going to see Lazarus in heaven. Why would he cry? Because he began to identify with our sufferings and our pain, and he knew why he was here. It was more than just about raising Lazarus from the dead. And it was more about, man, I really miss my friend Lazarus. It was, if I don't stay on track to the cross, if I don't keep my pace, humanity misses heaven. And when Jesus was stumbling, it wasn't a stumble because Lazarus was dead. He knew where Lazarus was. He knew that without him, we were destined for an eternity away from God and away from everything good. You may say, well, yeah, but that still doesn't understand, still doesn't answer the question about suffering. I want you to look at Romans chapter 8. It's over just a few books there. You'll see Acts and then Romans. Romans chapter 8, verses 18 to 23. Romans chapter 8, verses 18 to 23. Listen to this. Yet what we suffer now is nothing compared to the glory he will give us later. For all creation is waiting eagerly for that future day when God will reveal who his children really are. Against its will, everything on earth was subjected to God's curse. Okay, now let me just pause right here. The curse that it's talking about right here is after the fall of mankind, when God looked at Adam and God looked at Eve and said, Adam, for the rest of your life, you're going to sweat and there's always going to be thorns growing around you. You felt it in your business every single day, okay? Not a surprise to you. For the ladies, he looked at her and said, you will have intense pain during childbirth. Okay, so that's what this is referring to here. Now let's keep going. Verse 21, all creation anticipates the day when it will join God's children in glorious freedom from death and decay. For we know that all creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth right up to the present time. And even we Christians, although we have the Holy Spirit within us as a foretaste of future glory, also groan to be released from pain and suffering. We, too, wait anxiously for that day when God will give us our full rights as his children, including the new bodies he has promised us. You know what pain and suffering literally is? It's God reminding all of us of the brokenness of the world, of what sin did to the world, but also reminding us that it's not going to be that way for forever. When you see pain and suffering, like when we watched Hurricane Katrina and those other hurricanes coming up, and people go, well, you know, where was God in the middle of all this? This is God reminding people there's going to be pain and suffering, but here's why. When you rebelled, that's what created all of this. I'm in the mode of salvation, and I can't do it through what's going on here. I'm going to do it through Christ, create a new heaven and a new earth. And this is the reminder of what's going to happen in the future. The reminder is when you see the pain and suffering, it's only for a limited time because eternity is a long, long time. I know you think, wow, that's a great theological truth. Eternity is a long, long time. It really is. And what God is trying to remind us through the pain and through the suffering is, hey, this is for a while. It's because of the sin of the world to let you know there is brokenness, that there is sin, that just because you're going to become a Christian, it doesn't mean everything is going to turn out okay, because if it did, everybody would become a Christian, right? I mean, if the Christians all had no pain and suffering, it would be like, I think I'm going that way. You know, I want to follow after that group. But God has set it up so that pain and suffering comes along so that we can then realize, hey, this isn't for forever, because what God is promising us to those who are his children is a future glory, heaven itself. When Sherry and I, over the last couple years, we've tried to have children. Some of you who are close to us know that. And it just was not going well. And we spent a lot of money trying to become pregnant. If you're around any of those things, if you've been around people or maybe yourself has gone through anything with infertility, you know. Insurance covers nothing. And so you're on your own with that stuff. And I remember even one Christmas time, we were down to $47.46 in the checking account. And we were just going, whew, what are we going to do? We just keep going. And, you know, we believe that God wants us to have a child, so we're just going to keep going. This last Christmas, we were in the process of trying to sell our home in Berea. At the same time, trying to get pregnant, at the same time, trying to start a church downtown, and had just moved downtown the previous month, okay, in November. We had gone to where my parents and a lot of my relatives are, which is in Springfield, Missouri, going there for Christmas. While we were there, got a phone call, and it was our real estate agent. I mean, this is around Christmas time. No one really buys anything around that time of year. If you've been in that market for, you know this. We get a call. Hey, we've got a pretty decent offer. Maybe not exactly what you want, but maybe it's worth getting to the table. And I listened to it, and I was like, no, that's not where it needs to be. Let a day go by. We made the counteroffer and said, here's what we would do. And they accepted the counteroffer. And we were like, wow, man, this is terrific. This is great. I mean, can't believe this. You know, the real estate agents had told us pretty much around Christmas time, you're not going to see anybody. Nobody's going to do anything. I'm like, man, this is great. The next day, Sherry said, well, you know, it's probably time for us to take an EPT, you know, the good old pregnancy test thing. And so we bought the digital one because you'll know this once you get married, to try to read those lines and positives and negatives, I mean, it gets to be a little goofy at times as to, you know, is that a positive, is that a negative, what is this? So we bought the digital because we're stupid, okay? And that one says yes or no. That's the way I like it. I don't like to have to read anything. It just tell me yes or no. And so we bought it, and we're there with all my relatives and stuff like that, and it pops up, and it says positive. We're like, whoa. We didn't say anything that day, and so next day we get up, she takes another one, it says positive. We're like, wow, man. Within 2 days, home sold, baby's on the way, and everything else. So I went to my parents because I knew that we wouldn't see them for quite some time, and what we did was we'd taken a picture of the EPT where it said positive. We emailed it to Sherry's parents, and you know, and I showed them. I said, hey, I want to show you a picture on my computer and stuff. And so they come around there, and they're going, what is that? You know, and they went, oh, you know, we were all excited and everything else. We get on the plane the next day, come back, and we went from Springfield to Cincinnati, Cincinnati to Cleveland. We land in Cincinnati, and I call our real estate agent because I knew that they were doing a home inspection on that day. I said, well, how's it going? He said, we've reached a little bit of a snag. Now, you need to know, man, I worked on our house like you would not believe. There were no problems with the house. I was like, there is not a problem with the house. He goes, no, there's not a problem with the house. I'm like, well, what's there a problem with? And he goes, well, they're trying to get out of it. I'm like, what? We've signed the papers. And he's like, well, I know that, but they're telling us some story about one of them's mom was supposed to move in with them, and she just found out that day that she had cancer. And I'm like, well, I mean, you know, it's kind of one of those things where I don't know these people. I'm assuming they're telling the truth, but are they just saying this to kind of get out of stuff? And I was like, well, I need a little bit more than that. I'm not trying to be harsh, but, you know, we did sign these things, you know, and what does this have to do with it? And they were like, well, the mother-in-law was going to live with them. And I was like, okay. We get back to Cleveland, call, and yeah, you know, this is really true, and so forth and so on. They'd like out of it. I was like, oh, okay, what do you do? Well, I'm not going to force anybody. You know, just let them out of it. You know, we'll just go back to the drawing board. Next day, or actually that same day, just as soon as we had returned, Sherry went to the doctor and had the blood test and everything else, and called us up and said, you're not pregnant. What? This is probably what they call a chemical pregnancy. You're not pregnant. I was mad. And I was angry. God, we're downtown trying to start a new church. We have signed on the dotted line a home for sale. It's been up since June, and we've sold it. And within 2 days, we had a home sold and a baby on the way, and in 2 more days, no home sold, no baby. Christmas was not a happy time. And I remember looking back at that and going, God, what are you doing? This was like a cruel, cruel joke. Man, it was devastating. So now then that we have this little bouncing wonder that's going to be on the way in December, you can understand why all those, I guess it was 2 months ago, when Sherry came to me right before the service and said, I'm bleeding and I'm bleeding bad, and I had to get her back real quick, that we're just like this, you know? Oh my gosh, it's not like, oh, well, next month we'll try again, you know? It was a big deal, you know? Huge financial investment on top of that. And just the trauma of being told yes and no, yes and no. And so we're always just jittery, you know. Sherry the other night was having all these pains, and we were like, what's going on, you know? And we just get jittery. Come to find out it was nothing, you know. But at the same time, we just get jittery. We found out on Thursday that we're going to have a little boy. Yes. And so we've already got a name. No, his name's not James. Everybody always thinks it's their name as if it's reaching the higher plane to come up to my name, you know. It's not Dennis Ennis. The guys in the band want me to name it Dennis, so that would be Dennis Ennis. That's not happening. No. And it's not Dylan, that's for sure. There's certain things I could never do to a little kid, and that's one of them. The name will be Josiah Colton Ennis. Is going to be the name. And so Josiah's Old Testament king, you can read up all about him. He was a good king, one of the ones that were actually good. Most of them were not. So Josiah was a good guy. And so we're expecting him on December the 14th. Everything looks great. The ultrasound looked perfect. I have pictures if you wanted to see the profile. He looks like he's kicking back. I kid you not. He's got his leg like over the other leg like this. Picture doing like that, and I'm like, well, that's a little relaxed. I mean, is this guy going to get out and work one day, or is this like what I'm getting, you know? That's all right, Dad, you know me, you know. And so we're getting more and more excited about that, but I'll tell you, we're still on edge. I mean, we've been snake bit a couple times, and we're just kind of going, oh my gosh, you know, is this going to work out? Is this going to be okay? So there's been a little suffering. There's been a little trauma along the way. And I look at that and I go, God, what is this all about? And the scripture tells us, hey, this pain and suffering is just for a while. You don't live for forever underneath all this. Some people are going to get it, and what's weird is some people don't. And you've been around those that, you know, maybe you're one of those that's never been through a traumatic experience. I'm just like, wow, man, that's amazing. But for the rest of us, 95 to 99% of us, man, we've had those days. It's just like tidal wave out of nowhere, whoosh, swamp our life. God's promise is this: pain and suffering is just for a while. It's not for forever. What is for forever is those who follow after him, God's children, those who call on the name of the Lord, in other words, believe on him and say, yep, Jesus is who he said he was. He says, I got a place that none of that stuff will ever happen. Matter of fact, for all you ladies who are always concerned about this, you get a new body while you're there. You don't have to work out. You don't have to eat right. You don't have to do it. You don't have to watch all those infomercials about how to have a better body in 30 days, and you buy all that stuff, and it sits in your garage, and it never is really used. You're like, those people were actors, you know? Yes, they were, and they starved themselves to get like that. You don't have to worry about that. God says, I'm going to give you a new body, you know? And I'm like, Jesus, could I be like 9 feet tall? Because I've always been short, and I want to stand over people, you know, for at least a little while. And I don't know if he'll do that or not. But the pain and suffering is here to remind us of the fallen nature that we live in, the brokenness, but that it's not going to last for forever. I can't tell you that it will always end up like what Jesus did here with Lazarus, where your trauma is resurrected. That is very, 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 very rare. To this day, Sherry and I are still a little shocked that we're pregnant. As a matter of fact, we learned not to get excited at all. I mean, even at this last ultrasound, when they finally said, you're having a boy, my meter finally went up a notch. Because I'm just like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? So you all can be praying with me, my faith would get a little bit better. But at the same time, it's just like when you've had it several times, and you know what I'm talking about. If you've been through breakups or anything like that, you can just feel it come. It's like, oh my gosh. Jesus wept. And when those traumas come in your life, know that he still does, that he knows what it feels like to be rejected. He knows what it feels like to lose somebody. He knows what it feels like to carry the sin of the world. Not just the crucifixion was painful. That was nothing compared to the sin that was laid upon him. But Jesus stands and he says, but it's not going to be like this for forever. It won't be like this for forever. I'm going to redeem. That's my goal. I'm going to redeem. I want everyone just to bow their heads and close their eyes this morning.